Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source of insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of December 14th, 2020. Today, we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to talking today about decarbonizing the United States electricity by 2035 without stranding any assets and green hydrogen. Tune in.
So, Mariah, there's an interesting article that I thought would be useful to discuss, and it has to do with, it's very forward-looking, and I think it's a good way to think about things. There are two foundational ideas that you want to carry in when we talk about the content of this article. And those two ideas are the following. One is that President-elect Joe Biden has big plans for climate. God bless him. We need to make sure he follows through. We're talking about $2 trillion worth of spending on climate, essentially a kind of a Green New Deal. But also, there's an explicit plan, a commitment to go to 100% clean energy grid. That is to say, electricity generation would be 100% clean, in quotation marks, by the year 2035, which is only 15 years away. Very aggressive. Question is whether or not such a thing is doable. If you want to make the electricity grid clean by 2035, there are two things you have to do. One is you have to build a lot of photovoltaics and wind turbines, right? You have to make a lot of new renewable energy facilities. And at the same time, you have to get rid of a lot of the existing fossil fuel infrastructure. So the first idea is that there's a commitment for 2035 to get to clean energy that will require shutting down power plants. Second important kind of point to have in your head is the idea that the concept, shall we say, of stranded assets. That is to say, when a utility builds an electrical power plant, they do a lot of calculations, right? They figure out how big a loan are they going to have to take out to build a power plant? How much money are they going to earn from the power plant? How long does it take to pay off the mortgage on the power plant, et cetera, et cetera? That gives you the idea of an end of life of a power plant that's planned from the beginning. It's part of the calculation that the utility does is say, okay, this power plant is going to be here for 30 years and yada, yada, yada. If you have to shut the plant down ahead of that planned end of life, the asset is stranded because you're leaving money in it, right? And no utility wants to do that. And if the government were to force a utility to shut down a coal plant ahead of its planned end of life, the utility would say, hey, fork over some bucks, Mr. Biden, if you want me to shut down my power plant. So having said that, Mariah, does that make sense before I go on and describe the content of the article from a scientist named Emily Gubert?
You're with me? Spot on. Yep.
Okay. All right. So you've got this idea. You got big plans to replace power plants. You get the idea of stranded assets. A scientist named Emily Gubert has published a paper, quite interesting paper, very pragmatic, very appealing. What she did was to go out and collect information on every fossil fuel powered power plant in the United States, 1,000, 1,500 of them or so, put them all in a big spreadsheet and figured out what was the planned obsolescence date. What's the planned year of the end of life of all of those plants, right? All those power plants across the country. And it's great. We'll put up a link to it, but there's an interactive map. You can scan through the years. You can look at different parts of the country. Of course, I've looked at Massachusetts, what it's going to look like in 2035. You can do things like that. It's quite entertaining.
What's it going to look like in 2035?
Well, there'll be a few power plants left, and the Salem power plant will be running on natural gas, right? 2035. Okay, what are we going to do with that? But what falls out of the analysis by looking at all the power plants across the country is that it's shutting down and getting rid of those power plants is not as expensive as one might have thought. And that in terms of the way it's quoted is capacity years, but basically in terms of how much of the hardware, how many of the power plants are going to be left over and have to be paid for to be shut down by the year 2035, 15% of the entire grid, the entire installed base of power plants in the United States, which is kind of remarkable. That, and I think, I mean, I was explaining this, thinking this through myself. I mean, if you've ever been to, well, I've been to Japan or Korea, right? Everything is new. All the power plants have been built since World War II. They're all brand spanking new because, you know, like in Europe and in Asia, the wars destroyed everything. So all new infrastructure was built after the Second World War. Here in the United States, many of the power plants go back many decades, right? Because we were the first to industrialize, right? So it turns out that a lot of the power plants in the United States are relatively old and could be shut down without this concept of a stranded assets, because the United States has been kind of ahead of the curve for the last 150 years. And that's an advantage compared to the rest of the world, that we can plan to shut these power plants down. And so we'll come back to it, Mariah. But it's very interesting that the United States has the possibility of shutting down a lot of its fossil fuel powered plants without undue economic penalty. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And just to, maybe you could sort of clarify this for me, because it's a question I was thinking as I was reading it. Basically, what it's saying is that these power plants are aging out. So rather than refurbish them and invest the money to sort of rebuild them, because that would be expensive, and then you're investing money in something that is being phased out anyway, you just kind of let them sort of die a quiet death. Is that basically what she's getting at?
Basically, yeah. I mean, I think that in the article, she's not saying that a certain plant will close at a certain time. But if you look at the anticipated financial end of life, when the calculations say you've gotten all the money out of it that you can, this is from the utility perspective. At that point, the federal government doesn't have any financial penalty to tell someone to shut it down, right? You don't have to pay them because the asset hasn't been stranded. And I think so that's one side of it. The other important side of it, I think, from the author's perspective, is that if you identify all these plants, you can now take a 10-year horizon and say, hey, this plant at this location is going to be shut down by the year 2032, right? You can start planning for that now. And what an enormous advantage that is for the community, for everyone, right? And that's the other, I think, benefit, or the other good thing that fell out of this article. Number one is that we can do it. And number two is that if we start now, we can avoid most of the horrible things when a big power plant just shuts down and walks away, right?
Right.
And so that feeds into all kinds of additional questions about how do you plan for a shutdown, right? How do you, we talk about a just transition, because one of the points made in the article is that every one of these power plants is connected to a community, right, where people actually have jobs, where people, there's a diner outside of the power plant where people have lunch, right? And people live there.
They depend on their taxes that it brings
in. Right. All that stuff rolls together. And so if you want to make a transition that is as just as possible, the sooner you start planning, the better, right? And I think that's a good thing to recognize. And for me, it brings up yet another question. So there's another article that I saw floating around where the following idea is laid out. A power plant, instead of being run on natural gas with relatively small changes, could run on hydrogen, right?
Green hydrogen.
So if you have a source of green hydrogen, that is to say, hydrogen manufactured without any carbon dioxide penalties, right? You could run that power plant on hydrogen, which would have no emissions. It would be great. And this is an honest question, Mariah. I mean, I don't know the answer. Is it environmental justice? Is it a just transition to take a polluting, well, it used to be a polluting power plant, but nonetheless is an imposition on a frontline community, a fence line community, and all of a sudden magically change the fuel to hydrogen? And you may not be pumping out carbon dioxide, but you're still running that plant in that neighborhood. Is that an environmentally just transition? Is that a fair thing to do? I mean, I don't know, right? I just don't know. It would be convenient to reuse some of the infrastructure. In fact, down in the town of Somerset here in Massachusetts, there's a coal plant that's been shut down, right? But that coal plant has all the connections into the grid and would be a perfect place to bring wind, offshore wind turbine electricity onshore, right? Because you already set everything up. I mean, everything's the infrastructure to pump the power out to the grid is already there. Why not reuse it? But is that fair to the people who live there, right? Should that just knock down the plant and let them go to the beach there, make it a nice place to live?
Well, yeah, I think there's a lot of questions you have to ask. You know, first of all, does having the power plant, well, the green, say you are, go back to the green hydrogen, transitioning from coal to green hydrogen, certainly at face value, that's a less polluting. But I think it would be important to understand the background of green hydrogen to ensure that it isn't, you're not just replacing one pollutant with something that will be another pollutant further down the line, or a higher risk or different kind of risk that's just as bad further down the line. So I think understanding the environmental impacts of green hydrogen would be critical, of course, there. And then certainly just getting rid of the whole entire thing would be way better, right? I mean, it'd be lovely to not have a big power plant in your backyard if you can. That's the whole not my backyard argument. But, you know, maybe that's creating a lot of jobs for those fence line communities. Maybe it's bringing in a lot of tax benefits. Maybe having that power plant there actually is doing more for the community than it is, more good for the community than it is harm. Certainly not a coal power plant. I can't see how that's doing more good for the community than harm, just because of the much more dire impact we know that burning coal has on health of the people and on the health of the home that we live in called our planet. But I think those would be good questions to ask. What are the follow-on effects to all of these things? Looking at it as a systemic view rather than that one, you know, power plant focus.
And I think that's the beauty of this this article, which we'll of course put up links to. But by recognizing that the reality of the Biden plan that calls for shutting, you know, clean energy in 2035 necessitates a hard look at all the power plants that exist. And the good news is that we have the time to think through how best to make these transitions, right? Each community should know this power plant may go away. What are we going to do about it? And that's a good thing. I mean, so there's that. I mean, one of the points that's made in the article is that because, the transition away from the jobs and the community benefits of having the power plant is that if you had universal social services, if everyone had medical care, if everyone had a job guarantee, then it wouldn't be so painful to shut down these plants, right?
Yeah. And
there you go.
That was actually the sort of the bigger point, the big picture point that I wanted to kind of push back on all of this with, which is, you know, do we have time? We have to rapidly decarbonize, right? We have 10 years to get carbon out of the system of our planet. And there are many ways, many things we need to do. We've talked a lot about regenerative agriculture as a good approach. But, you know, do we have time to let these power plants sort of slowly wind down? Sure, that fits in with the 2035 Biden plan, but, you know, that's just a number that Biden has pulled. I mean, there's research, there's background there, but, you know, 2035, it's, you know, the planet, the physical balance of the Earth is not going to be like, oh, right, okay, 2035 is the deadline that the humans have set, so we won't do anything real bad to humans until then. I mean, that just isn't, that's not how it works. And so there's a sort of, you know, the pushback there is, do we have time? And maybe, perhaps, some of these approaches, which is where we just rapidly shut down everything that we can while still allowing, I mean, obviously we have to keep power going, but the idea of giving universal basic income to people who are in these fields that are going to be without a job until we can get them something different, or you know, as you mentioned, some of the other social services. And I'll tell you what, we can borrow the money we'll have to pay, the trillions and trillions of dollars that the Federal Emergency Management Association, or FEMA administration will have to pay in disaster relief in 10 years if we don't do all of this. We'll just borrow that from that future and pay that toward these people. I mean, this is all sort of idealistic thinking, but at the same time, maybe it's more realistic than idealistic, because you can't tell Mother Nature what she's supposed to do on a 15-year timeline.
I mean, I think the time is upon us for big thinking. Right, that you, this is the crisis of the moment, and that the response to that, to the moment, has to be enormous. Right, how enormous? So whether or not, I mean, I guess my belief, I'm not sure if it's in this article we're talking about or somewhere else, but if you set a target, if the government sets a target for renewable energies, and the experience of the states has been when the states set targets for renewable energy, oftentimes they're achieved much faster than the target, right? And that the imposition of a clear deadline that's a real deadline, things often go much faster. And I guess I have this optimism that says if we just get our proverbial act together, we might find that a lot of this stuff happens much more quickly than we think. Right. And the real issue is getting traction, making the commitment and deciding we're going to do it. And then we find out, oh, my God, it was a little bit simpler than we thought.
Right? Yeah. There's market signals that you can send with those kinds of deadlines that rapidly pushes the technology and the research and development and innovation in those areas so that things move quickly, because that's where we're headed.
Yeah.
So that's true for sure.
Well, I guess we should put it down there, Mariah. What I'll do is we'll put up links to the various articles. There's interactive graphs. You can find your own hometown and look to see what it will look like in the year 2035 in terms of power plants, all that kind of stuff. It's very interesting. We'll put that stuff up on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have questions about any of this stuff or suggestions, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. You can listen to us on your smartphone. Please ask your friends to listen to us on their smartphones, because you can find us. You just go poking around the Climate Minute, Mass Climate Action. You'll find us. I want to thank D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. See you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.